Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome to the second podcast of the Kalamistan podcast. And with me, I have the amazing Jonathan Ramnak, also known as Bilal Ramnak. For those of you who don't know, Bilal is an ex-YouTuber. He's an aspiring student of knowledge. And he's got a keen interest in politics, having studied politics. All right, Bilal, your turn. Introduce yourself.
That's basically accurate. I wouldn't say I'm an amazing person, but that's basically accurate.
Okay, the modest Jonathan Ramnak.
Alhamdulillah. Yeah, so that's basically accurate. I studied politics, sociology, philosophy, these sort of associated things, history at a university. And in that time, I was focused a lot on liberalism, secularism, but also how these things relate to the far right, because the Muslims today, we talk a lot about the far right and Islamophobia and racism and all these topics, but very often we don't really understand these issues particularly well. This is what I find, is that that we don't really understand the people we're dealing with. Like, we tend to sort of think that we call them the far right, and therefore as if it is the Nazi party. And there is an element of sort of pro-Nazism there, but like most of what we call far right is actually rooted in liberalism. In fact, even if you dig into the history, you'll find that the roots of the German Nazi Party also originate in the liberalism of the 19th century. Because the liberalism of the 19th century was a liberalism that, unlike liberalism today, had no problem with overt racism, had no problem with anti-Semitism. Things that today we would say that's not liberal, in the 19th century it was fine. And nationalism as a phenomenon was an outgrowth of the 19th century liberalism. So this is my sort of experience, that the far right today, and Islamophobia and many of these topics, you'll find many Muslims, we're very concerned about this. I mean, it's understandable. I mean, we know what happened in Christchurch and so on. But if we're going to deal with this topic, you can't deal with something from an area of ignorance. And so in my research, it wasn't just academic research. When I was active on social media, I'm not anymore, I interacted with many of these people, and some more prominent ones, and often it was quite civil. And it was not as if I went and I pretended to be something I wasn't. No, I was open about being a Muslim. And I would openly challenge these people. And sometimes they would respond to me politely. Sometimes they would even agree with many of the things I said. Other times you would get the rude response, you would get insults. Obviously, it's to be expected. It was sort of a mixed bag. And in hindsight, in many ways, I see it as a waste of time, but it was a good learning experience as well.
Before we get too deeply into this topic, can you perhaps give us a one sentence or two sentence summary as to who you are? How do you describe yourself?
Well, I think the way you described me was pretty accurate.
Okay, except the amazing part.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like, there's nothing really that much there.
Okay, so what have you studied, just so that listeners have some context?
Studied in a secular sense or an Islamic sense?
Both.
As well, like, in a secular sense, I did a Bachelor of Arts in politics and sociology, and I also did a lot of studies in philosophy during that time. And in an Islamic sense, I studied at Dr. Bilal Phillips Islamic Online University for many years. I took many courses, and I tried to study with many local shiukh and ulama, and alhamdulillah, I got accepted to study at Jamiat al-Islamiyah in Medina University this year, and I'm going at the start next year, inshallah.
MashaAllah. Yeah. So that's great. So again, I guess we should also revisit the question as to why you're interested in this particular topic.
Like I said, my interest in it sort of came from a weird direction. My interest in it came because when I was in university, in politics, as a Muslim, if you give your Islamic perspective on a lot of essays, you will be marked very negatively. They will not read. But the far right was always an option topic, and if it is a topic which both you and the professor, admittedly for different reasons, dislike, you can give a lot more of your own opinion.
Yeah,
and that was in a weird way how I got interested in that topic. But then I also began to realize that this is something that, as Muslims living as a minority, we have to understand who these people are who are against us and what is.
Well, that's an interesting question. Why do you think they're against us?
Well, again, I could talk about that for a little. But I would say ultimately, because in many ways, I would say that their perception of what the West is. I'm not saying this is everyone's perception, but their perception of what the West is, if you look into it historically.
By the way, I love how you just dived into the topic
without introducing this. But you introduced me, so I'm like, I can't add anything
more. Okay, fair enough. Right? Mashallah, I love the passion that's there, the interest that's there.
I would say that they're against us fundamentally because their perception of what the West is, regardless of what branch of far right, because there's a few sub-trends, is a vision where the far right is something that is the West, so the far right, is inherently based on a rejection of Islam. That is their perception of what the West is, and by extension, the rest of the non-Western world. But like at its core, Islam is what they see as their main enemy. That's their perception. Some of them might be more accepting to, say, African-Americans. Some might be more accepting to, say, people they see as high IQ.
Why? What is so threatening about Islam?
Well, I think, to be honest, it's kind of hard to see why they pick Islam in particular. But very often, if you look at what they say is threatening about Islam, it's things that they see as... Well, they almost sound positive, you know. It's like these people have strong. Even if you read that Christchurch guy's manifesto, the Muslims have strong community cohesion. They have strong family values. They have this. And if you read into it, they have a strong culture, strong faith, and this is a threat to our way of life because this will threaten our culture. Mm. That's their perception, right? But ultimately, I would say it's ultimately kufr. It is like it really is the fact that because they are ingrained in kufr, and because of this. They reject Islam because it is the haq, because their belief is in kufr, and when they believe in falsehood and they see the truth, this is something they reject. Mm. You know, that is their perspective. But also,
it can't possibly be the only reason.
It's not the only reason, but it's probably the main reason. The other reason is that they have their reading of history is a history that is one that has been actively against Islam since at least the time of Charles Martel.
Okay.
Right.
So you're going to have to explain who that is.
Charles Martel was a proto-French Frank who fought the Muslims from Andalus who were expanding into Europe. At the Battle of Tours, he fought the Muslims, and the Muslims were defeated because they had a lot of ganima and many of these other things. They were weighed down, and because of that, Charles Martel. Because he fought the Muslims were forced back. To these people, this is sort of when the West, their idea of the West and the West is in the war with Islam sort of begins. Now keep in mind, Martel in that time was a very conservative Catholic Christian, and he would not have opposed Islam because Muslims are homophobic or anti-Semitic or any of these new reasons they would give.
So what's changed?
Well, see, everything about them has changed culturally except this rejection of Islam. Right, like if you look, even 50 years ago, the way they were as a culture, and where they are now, it's very different.
Right,
because cultures, all cultures, do change. They evolve, they move. They move, they change, they adapt, and so on. And theirs is no different. In fact, I would say theirs, especially given their belief in this idea of progress, is a particularly extreme one in that. It is changing a lot in very short periods of time. Like very short periods of time are periods of massive change in their culture.
Mm.
You know, like very short periods of time are periods of massive change. And this is one of the core beliefs of liberalism, that society is sort of always progressing further and further and further and further, and it is always getting better. Even those who are called conservatives, and these are obviously the core of the far right, are actually liberals. And because when the term conservative was first coined, it referred to the people who opposed the French Revolution and sort of believed in the Catholic Church and aristocratic values. But today it means the people who were in the 19th century called liberals. Like the people who were in the 19th century called the liberals. Like in the 19th century, you had three factors. You had the conservatives, you had the liberals, and you had the socialists.
Okay.
And what's interesting is that the socialists and the conservatives had more overlap than the liberals and the socialists did. Because the conservatives and the socialists opposed the same thing, And both of them, for different reasons, were interested in the welfare of the poor, whereas the liberals of the 19th century weren't. They were interested in businessmen. And this is, if you've ever heard what's called libertarianism, and that's kind of important to the far right, because that's kind of their intellectual starting point, is this ideology called libertarianism, which they sometimes call classical liberalism, or I would call orthodox liberalism, because it's sort of an attempt to revive this older 19th century liberal ideas of sort of not really caring that much about the poor, but caring about mercantile values and giving nationalism a bit more importance. These people, who are today mostly called the conservatives, right, they are the root group of people who are opposed to Islam.
Okay.
Yeah. And to a degree, by the way, some of it...
But it doesn't really make sense from one perspective, in the sense that, there's some ideas that they would be very much in agreement with, such as the family values aspect of it all and so forth.
But even their, which is actually something I would bring up with them when I used to debate with them, but like even their perception of what a family is sort of different to us. To them, a family is like a nuclear family. It's sort of, you know, two parents, two kids, and a dog, right? Whereas the Islamic perception of family is an extended family, is, you know, it's generations, it's going out, and it's sort of something they would see as being tribal or kin or clan based, or they have like a whole bunch of notions about how, but this is to them not really. And also I would say that a lot of this rhetoric on family values is actually a smokescreen. It's not that,
what?
Like, it's not really that they strongly believe in that, but they will put up that we, like, to give themselves a distinct identity, they will push themselves a certain way to get the support of certain groups of people, right? Like, you know, the more religious Christians, older people who they feel their families have neglected them, it's very appealing. Like in this society, because a lot of people abandon their older generations. Right? This is sort of well known. A lot of older people are very open to this rhetoric about family values, because they think, oh, my family has abandoned me. Wouldn't it be nice if we were in a society that family was something important, right?
Right.
You know, so that's why, that's the thing. Like, also, like, the thing is that the family values talk is they might acknowledge we have family values, but they'll frame it as a negative. Like, they'll say that's why Muslims are dangerous, because they have large, strong families, and that's a threat to our... But
why would that even be a danger?
Because they say that, like, some of them, in fact, many of them believe that they are being demographically replaced. So because Muslim families have more children, according to them, this is a threat because they will be reduced in numbers as an ethnic group, right? And this is when you get into the, really the far, far right, right? Is that they believe that as a people, their numbers are going down, that they're having low birth rates. And even many often, their issues, they'll project them onto us. And because Muslims outside of the US are the main ethnic minority in almost every Western country.
Okay.
Right. US is the exception, where African Americans, who are mostly non-Muslim, but there is a large Muslim minority, and Latinos, where there's not many Muslims, are larger than any Muslim group. But also sometimes you'll find similar rhetoric about Asians or about Indians who are not necessarily Muslim.
All right. Question, do you think it's become more commonplace in the sense that do you think that these far-right extremists have become more confident?
I think it's an ebb and flow. I think they were until Christchurch. I think Christchurch actually did really sort of make them think again.
Oh, that makes sense.
Because many of them, they were saying for years, they were going, oh, the Muslims are the terrorists, the Muslims. And then their own people go and massacre us, right? And then the guy writes a manifesto where he praises like all kinds of conservative thinkers. Like, even, for example, in his manifesto, he praised Candace Owens, who is a black American conservative who has criticized Muslim immigration in Europe, right? Okay. So you see, so I think...
So that's a bit of a strange sentence, in the sense that he has no problem necessarily against a black person.
No, but you know, I think he does have... I think he would have a problem, say, like, an African migrated to Australia or New Zealand, he would have a problem with that. But in America, the black people there are already Americans. You know, they're not sort of immigrants. And he's like, well, if these black American people are going to live in America, it's good that they support American values, and it's if they're going to support our like cause,
way of life, yeah,
then that's okay. Yeah. You know, so someone like Candace Owens to him, who is a black person who supports like his views on immigration, or maybe not entirely, but sort of has similar, that Muslim immigration into Europe is bad, and is pro-Trump, then that is something to be... So I think they were getting very emboldened. They were getting... So you found that to the point that Pauline Hanson put a bill into Parliament about it's okay to be white based on a shirt that Lauren Savin wore. Lauren Savin's a Canadian far-right activist who came to Australia.
So what was the shirt?
And she wore a shirt that said it's okay to be white. And some of the Australian media said, well, this is a far-right slogan and blah, 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 blah. And then Pauline Hanson said, we have to put a bill into Parliament. If you go to a Twitter feed, she'll explicitly say it's because Lauren Savin got criticized for wearing this shirt. Explicitly.
Wow.
So that's the thing. Like, this is just some YouTuber. Who cares what some YouTuber does, right? But Pauline Hanson, a parliamentarian in Australia, did care what some YouTuber did. And Lauren Savin, I might add, is somebody who cursed Allah for a social experiment. I won't repeat what was said because it's too disgusting.
Fair enough.
And it was so bad that the British government, the non-Muslim government, banned her from the UK. Think about that. So your own Western governments are... for this is something bad, that you have to be banned from the UK, and this is the same person who Pauline Hanson is endorsing. Yeah. By the way, when Lauren Savin and her friend Stephen Molyneux, who's very important actually because he's one of the closest things they have to an intellectual, had their conference in Adelaide, Tohidi, I'll just bring him up briefly, he was the keynote speaker at their conference.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I won't talk about him too much today, but I'll just mention him there. Right, so this is the thing is, I found they were getting very emboldened, but with Christchurch, it seems to sort of died down. This is the time that I kind of moved away from politics, personally, and that's kind of why I sort of got off YouTube. I just, like, after Christchurch, I didn't want to be immersed in politics anymore. It was just sort of a painful thing. I just...
Plus, look, I think social media in general has a toxic quality to it, toxic nature.
I agree. And you know, there were many...
part of why we're doing this podcast is we're trying to encourage a level of, you know, positivity, basically. Yeah. You know, showcase people like yourself who have some love for certain topics, who are passionate about something, are willing to serve the community and so forth.
Yeah. There was a European philosopher in the 19th century called...
Again, I love that passion. Yeah, and then moved to the
called Schopenhauer, who said about media and his stuff. This is not social media. This is journalists. That it gave people borrowed opinions, so people didn't have to think. They just borrowed opinions from what journalists said. But in our time today, social media is even worse than that, because you're not even borrowing from like an intellectual or sort of a verified source. You just, some guy says blah 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 on social media, and this is not just the far right. It's funny, it's in a Muslim context. Someone will go on social media and say X, Y, Z, and then like half the Muslim Twitter will support him, and half will be against him, and obviously no, this is this, and half, and you know, and it just causes so much polarization.
Yeah,
you know, and it's just like, over what? Like, what are you arguing over? No one is convinced by your arguments. You're just getting angry for no reason, angry for the sake of being angry.
Right. One of the things that I'm curious about asking is, you know, your own experiences with the far right, you know,
I actually have had some experience with the far right, especially on social media, but even a little bit in real life. The university I went to, there was a group who were active on campus. They weren't open about who they were, but they were a...
By the way, you once told me a while back that you if I'm not mistaken, you had some communication on Twitter with Lauren Southern?
No, I made a video refuting her.
I see.
With Ali Dawa's permission, because her and Ali Dawa had a fight and a debate.
It was Ali Dawa, that's right. Yeah. Okay.
And I communicated with Ali Dawa that I thought it was good he was confronting these people, but I thought he didn't argue it particularly well, but I was polite about it, right?
Okay.
And he said, I agree with you, brother, and I said, I want to make a video responding. And he said, yeah, mashallah, it's a very good idea. And he allowed me to do it, and he encouraged me to do it, and I made a video responding to her. And then, so this is, that's it. I made a video refuting Lauren Savin on social media, and also a few of these other people. It wasn't just her, but because that debate happened, that it happened to be her. If he'd been debating this...
Just in a nutshell, who is Lauren Savin for those
people? Lauren Savin is a Canadian journalist / Twitter celebrity who sort of became known with Rebel Media, which is a Zionist media company in America. and which supports far right causes, but it sort of started as a Zionist organization. And they're the ones who broke the story about Jordan Peterson. Jordan Peterson became big, and Lawrence Savin is the one who interviewed Jordan Peterson.
Mm.
And so they kind of launched each other's careers.
Okay.
And but since then, Lawrence Savin has associated with like the European New Right, like Generation Identity,
yep.
and similar such people. And so when she debated Ali Dawa, I made a video sort of commenting on this and adding my point. I don't know. I don't think she ever watched it. But later on, we did get into an argument on social media when I was refuting. She put something up about, what was it? I forget what it was. But I did actually get a. It was about free speech. They made a point about free speech, and I refuted. I said, "Well, you say you believe in free speech, but you would not defend. But free speech is not." The free speech of like what do you mean when you say free speech? Because you can say I believe in free speech, but all you promote is people who agree with you. That's not free speech.
Mm.
That's just supporting people who agree with your speech. Free speech would be promoting the speech of people who do not agree with you.
Right? Mm.
That's what Chomsky said. Right. So that was sort of my. But also, I had a lot more debates with later on with Stephen Molyneux online. Stephen okay. Molyneux, in some ways, he's her teacher. He's the closest thing the far right have to an intellectual. He's sort of. Someone who reads Aristotle and Ayn Rand, okay. and he sees himself as a philosopher. So I had a few arguments with him on social media about a number of topics. I can't say I found them to be particularly intellectual arguments. I can't say I found him to be a particularly intelligent person. But he and I had some, I did get some responses. So some of you who followed Twitter that time, you might actually have worked out who I am by now.
What, do you have a specific Twitter handle?
I had a handle at that time, but okay. So those who followed my handle at that time okay. would might remember who I am,
mm.
But because of the people who I used to debate, I also debated Richard Spencer, who is a well-known white national, so that's even further down the spectrum. And the thing is, they get more attention, but they're not nearly so big. Like they're a fairly small sub-fraction of the actual far right are those who are out and out white nationalists. They exist, they're there, but they're not that big. Like the big currents are people like Stephen Molyneux, people like Lawrence Savin, who do hold some racist views, because you'll find Lawrence Savin made a documentary about black people in South Africa who allegedly are threatening white farmers and blah blah blah. This right. is something that Fraser Anning talked about. But at the same time, their whole core is we believe in the West, and the West isn't necessarily about the white race, it's about the Western values, and Western, which always involves a rejection of Islam, by the way.
Mm.
Many of these people will define the West differently, but in every case, it will result in Islam being excluded.
Mm.
And I wouldn't necessarily say that is wrong, even though Islam has influenced the West, and obviously the West has influenced Islam. Like, we were having a podcast in English that shows that the West has influenced Islam. But, yeah, so I had some debates with many people on the far right. And this was last year, the year before that.
Right.
So even my debate, my getting involved in that Ali Dawa, Lawrence Savin situation, the reason I got involved in it was because it was ongoing. It wasn't just they had a debate and then it stopped. Like, they were having debate on social media, and that's how I got involved into it. Right. Mm. I won't get into too much detail, but that has got in. I just know that the way we should handle it is slightly different. You know, I respect you, mashallah. And not I said that to Ali Dawa, not to Lawrence. Right. But yeah, so I made that. So that was, by the way, Lawrence Savin and Tommy Robinson's camera guy in that time was a guy called Kalen Roberts, something like that.
Okay.
And he came with Lawrence Savin to Australia. He left the far right recently, and he has a video talking to Ali Dawa. Right there, you can find it on YouTube, on Ali Dawa's YouTube channel. Kalen, I can't say his name, Robertson.
Okay, so back to the original question, which was your own personal experience.
Yeah, so on university, we had a far right group who were called the Antipodean Resistance, and they are proper white nationalists.
Okay.
Interesting
name.
Antipodean means Australia, so they were resisting. They did not obviously walk around openly, but they did things. So, for example, there was an event the socialists were holding on Noam Chomsky. And by the socialists are also a problem for a different reason. But the socialists were holding an event on Noam Chomsky. And they went and graffitied all the posters on campus, and there were a lot of them, with the Star of David that said Yid next to it. Right? And then when people would put up a poster for refugees, they would put up like scratch out refugees, they'd put refugees. And I actually met them in person. I was in a sociology class. And there were these white guys in the corner. Right? And I saw them and I didn't have anywhere to sit. So I had to go sit next to them. I sat right at their table. As soon as I sat down, they started shaking.
Why?
And they got scared of me.
Why?
Because they're actually cowardly.
The listeners can't see you. You don't look that scary to me.
No, but they're cowardly by nature. Right? They're just by nature. If you actually confront them in real life, they are cowardly. Right? The other thing I know, another experience I had with the far right, is I knew a guy who was a Marxist.
Okay.
And I used to, there was a guy who used to sell books at university, and that guy would be there. He wasn't the bookseller. He was a guy who goes, and we would often have discussions. And he was a Marxist. And unlike most so-called socialists today, this was a guy who actually read Das Kapital, read the heavy books from Marx, read the German ideology and so on. And we would have conversations. And then that same guy became far right.
Wow.
It's not as uncommon as you think, right? Okay. And just all it needs to do is... Actually, it's because he's the one who I found out who Lawrence Ivan was because of him. He Lawrence Ivan and Stephen Molyneux, because he started to listen to these people. And despite his learning in Marxism, this did not prevent him from going... But he still kept a lot of the Marxist ideas. And he called himself something called a Nazbol, which is not really part of our discussion today, but they merged left-wing and right-wing ideas. Mm. So economically, they're sort of leftists and then right-wing. But then he went further to the right. He became a white nationalist, a Richard Spencer type.
Yeah.
I saw that in real time. I saw someone become far right in basically real time.
Okay.
Right. He still liked me though. That was weird, right? Mm. He still would always socialize with me even after he changed. But after a while, I didn't want to deal with him because he became when I got sick of politics, I didn't want to deal with that guy anymore. And I would never say we were friends. He might have seen us as friends. I never saw him as a friend. Mm. I just saw him as someone I would talk to.
So have you had any meaningful discussions with some of these guys?
Only on social media.
Only on social
media. Only on social media. I don't know, maybe social media is a safer platform or whatever. I don't know what it is.
Is that because you have more of an opportunity to discuss things in greater detail?
I don't know, to be honest. I don't know. I think maybe social media, just the nature of it allows... someone to engage more. I can't really explain it, but on social media I did have some more positive discussions with a few of these people on the right. Well, I say positive, but I can't, the net positive, I don't think it impacted them that much, to be honest. So all in all, I would say it was probably I was advised by someone from an Islamic organization at the time that was a waste of time.
Mm.
Right? And in hindsight, I tend to agree with that view, even though I learned a lot.
Mm.
In hindsight, I say, yeah, that was probably... that person was correct and I was wrong.
Okay.
Right. But in many ways, it was tied to my degree. Because when I finished my degree, I stopped. In many ways, it was... If I hadn't been doing it, the degree I was doing, I probably wouldn't have engaged in it as well.
Mm.
Right? But I still think it's important to understand. Right. Also, one of the ironies is that many of those who are... more militant, because they're more anti-Semitic, sometimes they have more sympathy for Muslims. Because they don't like Jews, and they perceive Muslims as anti-Jewish, sometimes they have more time to deal with Jews, not Jews, with Muslims. That's one of the ironies of it all. But ultimately, I would say even that was not really a constructive... I knew one person who became Muslim from that movement, before my time. Mm. And I knew him. But now he has gone astray. He's become al-bid'ah in a different direction. That's another topic.
Let's stick to the
exactly.
far right.
Yeah, but he was from the far right. He became Muslim, and then I knew him. Actually, I knew two people like that, and that's another thing. I knew another person who had also converted from the far right.
Mm.
So
you've basically got an understanding as to what actually motivates these people to make that leap into the...
Well, yeah, I would say... let me tell you this. I understand their perspective without agreeing with it even slightly. To them, they believe, sincerely, that the Western civilization is under threat because of the presence of other people in their lands, and they believe these other people have a distinct culture that is not compatible with theirs, and as the population of these people grows, their power and influence in society will increase, and their influence as white Western people, not necessarily Christian, but sometimes, will disappear. That's their perspective. I think it's entirely incorrect, or mostly incorrect, and I think what's more likely is the danger that Muslims will just integrate and assimilate entirely into the Western society, and even lose our Islam.
Yeah, yeah.
May Allah protect us, than us taking over in any kind of way. I don't, but that's their perception. That the, and I understand how someone could reach that perception if they had a one-sided vision. Like if they didn't look at it from a broad perspective of someone like me, who as a Muslim obviously has a different perspective, I could see how someone looking for only one window could say, yeah, that's what's happening. Because the Muslim population is growing in their society, and it's a population of people who they see as outsiders, who have different cultural values. By the way, what these bad cultural values are shifts. So, for example, so like if you went back 20 years ago, the fact that Muslims were against LGBT would not have been a big deal. The far right would not have cared that Muslims were homophobic. But today, it's a big deal that the Muslims do not accept LGBT rights. That is today a big deal to them. And you have people like Milo who are LGBT, who are part of the far right. And they're open about it. Which is, again, sure, because the West itself, it doesn't remain consistent on what its set of values are. And but always, in its shifting of values, it can always find a way to project itself against Islam. So its values can turn all around. Like all around, like it's almost like a clock. Like say Islam is in the center of a clock, it's like the hand of the mouse, it never comes into the center, it just keeps going around without ever, while always being opposed to the center, it never joins there. You know, that's what I tend to find, is that these people are, and this is something that Muslims, we have to be cautious of, but I think we also need to be also, we're not to take them too seriously either, because you find some Muslims who go to the other extreme and they think the far right is such a great threat that we have to compromise everything and, you know, work with the left, and even if it means pushing LGBT, even if it means pushing, you know, feminist ideas that contradict Islamic views on gender, even if it means pushing certain notions of racial conflict that are not in harmony with Islamic views on race. Or there is a current of thought who are calling themselves now Muslim critical studies.
So here's the question. What is the way forward? What do we do as a community, knowing that there is this threat? And we should understand, obviously, the community itself, the greater Muslim community. It's not monolithic. We're all very different in terms of our approaches towards different groups. Some of us may be more lenient towards these groups, some of which you mentioned. Some of them may be, you know, have similar views to yourself. So what is the way forward as a community in total?
Well, I would say ultimately, people say, well, this sounds good. I would say ultimately it does go back to having tawakkul in Allah, but also in improving ourselves as Muslims. You know, in, as Muslims, if we are the best Muslims we can be, you know, we try to follow the deen and practice the deen and live by Islam, right? Inshallah, this will lead to the people's perception of us. But in saying that, we need to recognize that Rasulullah was the greatest human being, right? Sent by Allah as a messenger, and there were people who hated him. And if people hated the greatest person to ever live, right, they will hate us. There are going to be people who hate us as Muslims. It's not just because some Muslims say, oh, well, it's Muslims do bad things. And look, there's some truth to that. But it's not act as if Muslims are somehow doing bad things and everyone else is perfect. Like, their society is so full of problems as well, right? Even the things they'll attack us for, if you dig, you can find it in their society. You can find it in far-right groups. You can find the things they accuse us of, like of crimes and so on, right? I mean, yeah, of course there's Muslims who do bad things, but this is largely an excuse. Like, ultimately, it does go back to their vision. So as Muslims, what we need to do is make dua and return. Really, if we are Islamic people and we trust in Allah and we strive to be the best Muslims we can be, which would then mean we are the best people we can be. If you are the best Muslim you can be, you are the best person you can be. Then this is ultimately the best we can do. I think if you feel the need to engage with these people, you can. Like, for example, we see the brothers in Speaker's Corner who, mashallah, have done a very good job in responding to
these people.
In the UK. Okay. Have done a very good job in responding to these people. And I think maybe a few Muslims, even in Australia, could be doing that.
Who do you mean, like Muhammad?
Muhammad Hijab in particular, but also Ali Dawah. I'll give him a lot of credit. But I think Muhammad Hijab has been very, like, in terms intellectually, he is the stronger debater. He debated with someone else for reason, I haven't seen it yet, but he just had a debate with some other anti-Islamic personality. Mm. People like that, I think like there can be some Muslims who do that. I think there is a need for that as well. But ultimately, I would say the best thing is that we are, as Muslims, we are aware of it, but we don't become like over-concerned with the idea of Islamophobes are going to take over tomorrow and they're going to kill us all. Because there are Muslims who just think like that.
Mm.
And I think that's part of why initially I got interested in studying what is the far right. Because when you're in the Muslim community, you do hear a lot about Islamophobia and so on. And I say, well, who are these Islamophobes? What are they? You know?
Mm.
And having studied it for several years, I found that it's not as... Like, they were emboldened with the rise of Daesh and the European refugee crisis. But just like they were emboldened before Breivik. Like, Breivik... Like, it's kind of like they were going on a big rise. And then Breivik in Norway happened in 2011, and they had a meteoric drop. In fact, the old anti-Islamic movement, like people like Pamela Geller, were never able to regain their reputation because Breivik, this mass killer, praised them.
Mm.
But a new crop of people came up to promote a similar message, you know? And then now, with what has happened in New Zealand, I think this new crop have faced a lot of the same problems. Like, maybe it hasn't harmed them as much, but they have definitely toned down in their rhetoric. Definitely, if you actually go into what they're saying online now, you'll find most of them have toned down in their rhetoric. They were some of them were emboldened. Don't get me wrong. There was a subcurrent who were emboldened.
Who do you mean?
Like, there was a small subcurrent of like far right people on social media. But these are the type of people who I'm sure in real life, if you actually saw them, they're not tough people. They talk big online, but if you actually met them in real life, they are not the threat that they, oh, we support this liberating our lands and this. And by the way, that's the strange thing, is that they call themselves nationalists, but you'll find that the ones like the guy in New Zealand, they see all white countries, like not even all Anglo countries, like France is something he cites in his manifesto. Mm. Or even though France is a country that very strongly persecutes its Muslim minority, it's increasing in the mainstream. He saw it as all the invaders are taking over.
Mm.
You know?
Okay.
So these people will exist. Mm. And we make the world, yeah.
It's interesting that... you know, amongst extremists, there seems to be a type of, similarity. You know?
Yeah, I know what you mean. I definitely can see that there was, I definitely saw some overlap between even what we would call Muslim extremist, like, thinking and with some of the far right. And by the way, some of the far right were praised Daesh. Like Richard Spencer has praised, he supports Assad, but he said, well, I admire them for developing their identity and their culture and blah, 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 in their own lands. But when they attack our Europe, you know, the Western civilization will fight back and so on. Mm. You know, so it's not a universal praise, but it's a I respect my enemy type rhetoric. Mm. By the way, there's Zionists who talk like that. I read an interview with a Zionist who said that we don't hate the Arabs. We respect them as our enemies. They're our enemies till the day we die, but we respect them. And this is one of the militant Zionists who said that in an interview.
Mm.
See, so like, it's a praise your enemy type mentality some of them will have. But there's definitely an overlap. There's definitely an overlap. And even you found some people who, when Daesh was big, who converted to Islam, who might have had some of these backgrounds. Like, who might have had some far-right past.
Leanings, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, as a movement, do you see it as something that may potentially grow?
I think it'll grow and fall. So, it'll ebb and flow. So, there will be times it will grow. And there are times it could grow. Like in France, it could grow quite big. Other times, I would say, like in Australia, I can't see the far right becoming that big. I think in Australia, the far right have sort of, since Pauline Hanson's return to parliament, been pretty consistent.
But it's probably fair to say that to a certain extent, far right ideas have become normalized.
Yes, and I would say, but to a very large degree, it's because they're tied to liberalism.
Mm-hmm. You know, care to explain that a bit more?
Because, the Islamophobic ideas of the far right can spread because we don't hate Muslims because they're brown. We hate Muslims because they oppress women, because they don't accept LGBT rights, because they are intolerant. You know, so that's the key of liberalism. We're tolerant. We're tolerant, but the Muslims are not tolerant. You can't tolerate intolerance, which is Popper, a very famous liberal philosopher's idea. You cannot tolerate intolerance, right? And they'll weaponize this idea. Well, the Muslims are intolerant, you know, because we believe Islam is the haq, and there is a kufr. So we'll say another religion is kufr. To them, they will say, see, that is intolerant. You regard them as, you call us infidels. Of course, infidel is a Latin word that was used by the Catholic Church to describe non-Catholics, especially Muslims in the time of the Crusades.
But do you genuinely believe that these people, they have a love of or appreciation of liberal values? Or is it something else? Is it something which is theologically motivated or ideologically motivated?
It depends on the individual. Some of them are very sincere liberals. Some of them are, for that, by the way, Geert Wilders in Holland, who many of us see as like an image of a far, is a very sincere liberal. But someone like a Tommy Robinson or a Lawrence Sutherland, I guess Lawrence Sutherland has some ties to libertarianism from Molyneux, but I would say these people definitely have a mythological, because it's not exactly religious, it's not exactly Christian. But they have a mythological notion of what the West is, you know?
Yeah.
Like they, like to them, they have a mythological, like they almost worship the notion of the West.
Mm.
And anything they see as a threat to it must be destroyed, you know?
Yeah.
Some of them, you might find some Christian, like evangelicals, who are theologically motivated against Islam. Or Zionists, who have a theological opposition to Islam. But I would say they are, like that, what's that guy? Danny Nalia?
Right.
Yeah, but I would say those are a minority. They're a fringe, like, they're not the main element. They're sort of just tacked on to the broader movement, you know?
Right.
They're not guiding it.
So, was it the internet mostly that has guided this movement? Or
absolutely.
Given it its strength?
Absolutely. YouTube, social media, because if you see, there's a whole bunch of accounts, there's a whole network of accounts. And they all sort of have the same message, but they're different people. So you'll have someone like a Stephen Crowder, who has 5 million followers on YouTube, and he goes on, and like even people like Joe Rogan have him on his program, who will promote this same kind of message. Mostly he's just a Republican. But when it comes to Islam, he's a far-right individual. You could have... so it's a whole network of people on... If you go on, and there's a whole network on YouTube, there's a whole subculture that has millions of subscribers that follow these individuals. And I would also say, by the way, the traditional media has influenced this. Like the traditional news media, your Current Affairs on Channel 7 has influenced it.
Yeah, there's so many stories that are really anti-Muslim.
Like, this man is scabbing you for halal.
Sharia law.
Yeah. Yeah, they'll have like some Arab guy. He's like, "What are you doing here?"
And with the adhan or dodgy.
Yeah, they'll have like, "Do not film me. You are not to film." You know, they'll have it like that. And he'll be walking away.
Yeah.
You know, but even like the mainstream news story, they'll pick stories that focus on bad things happening in the Muslim world. When, like, say, example, like, how much do you hear about like what's happening in the Muslim world in terms of violence compared to say Chile? Chile now is having massive riots, massive. Because of economic crisis, protests and the police are attacking people, you hardly hear about it in social media. But Iraq or Syria, you'll hear about it every day. You know, so the media has focused the gaze on the Muslims, you know, on bad things that involve Muslims.
Right.
But like traditional media, which has influenced this, has been supported by the rise of online media, independent media.
Right.
Or people like, say, Alex Jones, who... did not start out as anti-Islamic bandwagoners, who saw a need, who saw a benefit in siding with this movement to get extra support.
Mm.
You know?
So part of it is opportunistic, yeah, if you like.
There's plenty of opportunists. Like, I feel like many of these people in a different circumstance, they would happily praise Muslims.
Mm.
Because it would benefit them to do so.
Mm, that's interesting.
You know, many of them are, don't get me wrong, I'm not saying, plenty of these people are opportunists. They don't actually believe in the stuff they're pushing. They get money from it, it's a career, and so on. I can't name which specific individuals, right, because I don't know them.
Right.
But many of their followers are very sincere.
Mm.
And some of them are sincere. And also, there can be a bit of both. Like, you can be an opportunist, but you can be sincere. You can be an opportunist saying, if I push this kind of rhetoric, I will get support, but it's not that I don't believe that rhetoric, or it's not that, or I'm going to focus on this thing I already believe because that's popular.
Mm.
You know, that's what we forget. Like, we shouldn't think that, oh, I've been pushing this rhetoric for so long, I now believe it. You know,
right?
Yeah,
right. That's interesting to note. I suppose one of the other interesting things that could be discussed out of this topic is you know, the manner in which these ideas have been spread. You know, I've sort of touched upon that in my previous.
Yeah, but I would say it's very much by social media.
Yeah.
Very much. Like, that is the stronghold of... And social media is annoying because it's kind of hard to fight. It's kind of hard to fight social media. You know, like, just the nature of it. So, like, look, think about when Daesh was big.
Yeah. Right?
How many people on social media became pro-Daesh because of social media's influence, right?
Yeah.
And if you met them even in real life, they wouldn't change their mind.
I mean, a lot of the research seems to indicate that many of these people are already in a kind of bubble, basically.
Yeah, that's right? Very much.
And they basically reach out towards people who are very similar-minded.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, all these movements are very much... But then social media allows you to be in a bubble, you know? Social media, Twitter allows you to only mix with like-minded people. And it's not just political. Like, if someone is like an anime person, right? They can be in an anime social bubble.
Yeah.
If someone is a rap hip-hop person, they can be on a Twitter account that is only about hip-hop and rap and so on. And if someone is a far-right person, they can be in a
social... I suppose that is the scary thing because if they are a far-right person and... they're living under those, you know, social media algorithms.
Yeah.
Then they're going to be an even bigger far-right person.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. It'll keep pushing more,
anti-Muslim bias.
Yeah, and, it's a sort of a feedback loop where, you know, you keep hearing something, so you believe it. Like, and no one counteracts that idea. Someone says, because what these far-right will also do is they will take real cases where a Muslim person did something bad. Because Muslims are not saints. Like, some Muslim guy did this in Austria. And then the anti-Muslim community, all over social media, all over the world, will share, this Muslim guy in Austria did this. This Muslim guy in Somalia did this.
Yeah.
And so, this is a real story involving one person or five people.
Right.
But they'll make it as if, look, all the Muslims in the world are like this. And so it's a loop where these people are fed night and day on their social media. A Muslim person in this country did this. A Muslim person in that country did that. A Muslim country and this person in this country did this. And so it legitimately, I told you those Muslims did this, and there, now there's one guy in Austria did that. I told you.
Hmm. Okay. Do you think Muslims are that savvy when it comes to understanding?
No, unfortunately. I think it's changing.
That was a very quick answer.
I think it's becoming better, but unfortunately, no.
So what are our impediments? What's stopping us?
Well, I think
is it just simply people are not talking about it, or what's
the issue? Think part of it is the fact that Muslims are mostly an immigrant or second generation immigrant community, so we are not really strong in society just for that reason, but also we don't really understand the society we're around in general, right? So specific subcultures are even more impenetrable. Secondly, it is a culture that is impenetrable to us for the most part, right? As a Muslim studying it, it is not a comfortable thing to be studying people who...
hate you, basically.
Yes, it's not. At times, you can find humorous things. But...
there's that famous meme that goes around, you know, Muslimic people and things
like that. Yeah, yeah. But like, or you can laugh at how ridiculous some of their interpretation of certain things are. Like they'll quote an ayat, and you'll say that's their test. Mm. Like, and you have
Shania
to.
Law.
Yeah, and you'll laugh at who was one of the far right people? I remember who was listening to, because I watched.
I was listening to one. One of them said basically, you know, Muslims are Islamophobes, and I was like, what? And he explained it. He said because Muslims are afraid of the Day of Judgment, and that's an Islamic belief. Therefore, all Muslims are Islamophobes.
Yeah, that's the type of thing they say.
Play around with the words and meanings of words.
Weird, and I mean, but the thing is, the other thing is that we should also be aware that these people. The other thing is, it's not as if these people have a strong understanding of Islam. Like, what knowledge of Islam they do have comes from, this is something important, the Mu'tadin ex-Muslim movement.
Right, right. Although some of them do surprise you from time to time.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is that like almost all the knowledge they have on Islam, which is not knowledge, it's just information, comes from that or it comes from Wikipedia. And that's something, which is another topic.
The most accurate website in the
which
world.
Which something we should discuss another time, is I think Muslims as a community, we need to look into how do we, seeing as Wikipedia is so widely used, even among our own,
right,
should we as Muslims be putting more effort into becoming Wikipedia editors and working on articles and things like this, you know? Even for our own people, so because many Muslim people use Wikipedia as a reference on Islam. Mm. And then they'll think strangely, where'd you get it from? Oh, Wikipedia
that's an
said.
Interesting idea.
You know, so that's another time maybe something we can discuss, you know?
So is that a hint basically to sort of stop our conversation?
I don't know. It depends. It's up to you.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah, look, we're on the 50-minute mark
that's
over
probably,
here.
Yeah, it's probably a good time.
So, look, this was an amazing topic from the amazing Jonathan. And, yeah, look, we would love to have you on another time. And, look, we're trying to figure out the identity of this particular podcast. And, you know, we're still trying to figure out a few phrases or keywords or, you know, phrases that we can say during the podcast, you know. And at the end of the podcast, you know, we've decided from the last podcast, at least, it wasn't a decision. We just sort of imposed it. So we end the podcast by saying, keep on kalamin.
Okay. So
you want to say it?
Okay. Everybody, till next time, keep on kalaming.
All right. Jazakallah khair. Oh, yeah. Take care, everyone. Assalamu alaikum.